The organizational change is critical to the success of the ERP effort, but the change is like an iceberg. Most people know it is necessary, but they are only prepared for a small amount that they can see, the tip of the iceberg that's above the water. But most of the change is facilitated by planning and setting up a culture to accept the change before the project starts.
This is the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel and Associates, a Newport Beach, California-based ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. The ERP OCJ seeks to share expertise, insight, experience, and research, and to create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success. And now, here's your ERP expert and host, the founder of Nessel & Associates, Dr. Jack Nessel.
Hey, Jack here. Today we're going to dive into how effective ERP can be an invaluable tool for business continuous improvement and value realization. In this episode, we will discuss ERP organizational change, strategy, and alignment with Mr. Greg Taffet. Greg Taffet is managing partner at Taffet Associates. Greg has over 30 years of technology, business, industry, and operational systems experience with an extensive background in mergers and acquisitions. Greg was honored with the 2017 CIO of the Year Apogee Award by South Florida Business and Wealth and was recently recognized by South Florida Business Journal as CIO of the Year finalist. He received the 2012 Universal Access Award in the individual category from the South Florida Digital Alliance for his long list of accomplishments, which have increased access to information and technology, thereby positively impacting the lives of many in several communities. We do know that ERP organizational change can be challenging. Effective strategy and alignment of a business within an ERP organizational change effort means addressing several factors, which often include utilizing proper methodologies and strategies for implementation, understanding success, being clear on the goals and objectives, understanding the potential challenges and building a strategy to address those potential challenges proactively, stakeholder alignment, and stakeholder ownership. And of course, in my view, the glue behind all of this is organizational culture. So today we'll explore these ideas further with Greg. Joining us from Miami, Florida, Greg, welcome to the show.
Jack, thank you for that very nice introduction.
You're welcome. Really looking forward to this conversation, Greg. You have great experience here, so I think our listeners are going to find this conversation helpful. So Greg, beyond my introduction here, could you further introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. At Taffet Associates, our mission is to help transform your business through strategy, through technology, and improve process and procedure to plan for growth and to stay in front of the competition. We provide remote, fractional, and interim CIO services. We also provide strategic technology consulting, including oversight and governance of ERP projects across diverse platforms. For over four decades of experience, we have expertise in retail, finance, manufacturing, risk management, the blue economy, energy, software development, and many others. And by working with us, you get the big company capabilities with boutique-like care.
Well, thanks, Greg. I appreciate that. My first question, Greg, is what advice would you share with our listeners on selecting an implementation partner, since they are all various methodologies and strategies for implementation? And I'm asking because I know that Taffet & Associates, as you'd mentioned, you have a very effective and unique approach. But can you share more with our listeners on that point?
Sure. First, you want to pick a company that specializes in the software that you have selected and focuses on your industry sector. They should have a number of employees that is a good match for your company. Meaning, if you're a small company, you want to pick a small implementation partner because they don't have a lot of overhead. If you're a large company, you want to pick a larger implementation partner. They should have a proven implementation methodology, a proven change management methodology, a successful track record, good references, and most importantly, you want to meet the people who will be working on your project. After all is said and done, you're hiring a team of people from the company, not the company.
Yeah.
While the company may be providing some support to the team, you're hiring the specific team. So make sure that you vet the team. And then finally, you want to have a company that you can have a strong contract with. Many times I work with companies that have their lawyers review a contract, and they are only capable of making sure the boilerplate sections of the contract are correct. Check that the contract specifically has sections that detail what the implementation company will do. What will they deliver? What is the timeline that they'll do it on? Are there reasonable termination options? Who will be assigned to the project? And what penalties are there if they don't deliver? These are some of the things you should look at when selecting a company.
All right. Well, Greg, suppose you're leading a kickoff meeting for an organization that is just starting an ERP implementation. How would you define and describe for them success in terms of an ERP organizational change? That is, how does an organization know if they are truly bringing value to a business and that they've met the objective?
That's something that we spend a lot of time working with companies on. First, we have to have the company leadership agree on what success is, because there are many criteria that can factor into this. Will it be increased sales? Will it be better productivity, increased profitability, more scalability, more agile organization, decreased cost, or some combination of all of these? Then we look at how the organization must change to meet these goals and outline a clear and understandable path to meet those goals. So, you know, I look at it and say, you know, every organization has a specific set of business objectives, and we need to look at those objectives and set a baseline first, and then set some key KPIs, and then track those KPIs to make sure that we're meeting our objectives.
Yeah, and I think that's so important, Greg, and I think that a lot of companies may undervalue that idea. You know, as you'd mentioned, you spend a lot of time working with companies on the front end and really being clear about and articulating the definition of success and how you develop objective business metrics and those KPIs. And that's certainly in a lot of the project plans that we've researched and reviewed over the years. There wasn't much in terms of tactical activity to make sure that that's accomplished. So pretty important notion.
Right. Yeah. We need to get specific, because a lot of people just say, hey, we want to have a better system. And that's a goal that is doomed for failure because it's too vague and doesn't actually give the employees something as a goal that they can meet.
Absolutely. You have to make it concrete, right? And objective and something you can really make visible, for sure. So how would you describe your general understanding of ERP implementation success rates in the field in general? And I'm not, Greg, I'm not talking about your projects, but just in general across the board with the ERP organizational change practice in general, what would you say in terms of success rates?
Well, a lot of the general media is saying that the success rate is going up, but it appears to me that the success rate is going up in fewer iterations. And by this, I mean that many, many implementation attempts are still failing on the first try because the business still wants to ignore our best advice. But now we have enough history and enough experience and enough learning to help businesses recognize the fact when there's a problem sooner and get them to be successful on the second attempt of an implementation versus the third or fourth attempt that it used to take many businesses years ago.
And I think, you know, our listeners in organizations would be wise to really rely on objective research when it comes to understanding ERP organizational change success rates. You know, you do see a lot of literature and it's all over the boards. And, you know, we've sat in ERP selection processes before and we've had ERP vendors come in and tell us that their success rate was 100% or 95%. And so I think you just need to rely on good objective research to really understand, you know, what that really looks like across the board.
Yes, very much so.
Greg, when you think about the procedures required for successful ERP implementation that ultimately create that business advantage, what would you say they are? Can you maybe walk me through the general steps? And I recognize that this is a pretty loaded question, but just in general, what are some of the general strategies that will enable a successful digital transformation from a process perspective?
Okay. Well, from my point of view, four steps that every company has to go through. The first step is enthusiasm, followed by commitment, followed by buy-in, followed by ownership. When you announce that you're going to do a ERP system, everybody is enthusiastic because everybody thinks somebody else is doing the work. Everybody is overly optimistic that, hey, this is going to be a great thing because it's going to make my life better. But then we need to get those people to commit to actually being involved in the project. They have to assign people from their staff who know the business. They have to be committed to the project. But still, that's not enough. The next step is getting them to actually buy in and say, okay, we've committed some people, but these people are not just going to be available the last 3 days before implementation. They have to be available X number of hours a week, every week, during the whole implementation process. But it's still somebody else's project. So the last step is now to get them to take ownership of the project. They've committed to it. They've put the people there, but it's still somebody else's project. Now we have to say it's your responsibility for success. It's not somebody else down the hall. This project is your project, not somebody else's. So the strategies for this are we have to find the right people to do the project. And we have to nurture the technology integrators. We have to look at developing the new workplace behaviors. And we have to make sure we have an effective communication in place with all the employees. So the integrators are the employees that bridge the gap between the traditional and the digital parts of the business. These employees help in integrating digital tools in the workplace and fostering stronger internal capabilities. Then for the behaviors, organizations must reinforce these behaviors to establish practices around the digital adoption and ideation. The fact that when employees generate their own ideas, companies are much more likely to succeed. And lastly, we have a huge responsibility in our, to have a good communication strategy. Organizations that are able to communicate with the employees are finding that they are 3 times more likely to succeed in their digital endeavors than companies that don't have a good communication strategy. So again, it's people, communication, and more people that makes things successful.
Good point. And I think the point that you had mentioned is really important right out of the gates in terms of getting people involved in the project. And you'd mentioned the ideas of creating enthusiasm, getting commitment, buy-in, ownership, very, very critical at the onset of projects. And because what you're doing there is you're getting the momentum going, you're getting the buy-in and right out of the gates so that people support the process and they understand the process. And I like some of the strategies that you had mentioned in order to do that. And of course, you need to find the right people. And I think as organizational leaders, that's a pretty important piece because there's going to be people that with the right leadership and the right coaching and the right nourishment, most organizations have the right people on board, but perhaps it gets to the point where maybe, you know, some of the internal stakeholders aren't the right fit in various positions throughout the process. And you need to be able to be dynamic and make adjustments there. But some great points. I appreciate it. So how do you get the business users? You know, so talking about, we've kind of set the tone early on, Greg, as a first step in the process. But how do you get the business owners to not only align, but to also take ownership of their digital transformation project? So I, just to drill down a little bit on that idea, I know you'd mentioned that that's one of your key points. But can you give some examples tactically? You know, when you put that project plan together, what can you do to really help create that ownership from a tactical perspective?
From a tactical point of view, the business owners need to give the responsibility for the project to the business departments, not just the business department leaders and not just the business department employees, but the whole business department. You know, in some smaller companies, the project is thrown over the wall to the IT department. In some larger companies, the project is thrown over the wall to the steering committee. And those are quick paths to failure. The department has to be involved in the whole project and be given the responsibility for the success. If they know that they're responsible, then tactically, they have to be involved in making timely decisions. They have to be providing the appropriate answers to the never-ending set of implementation questions. They need to be very, very involved in cleaning up the data. Everybody thinks, oh, we have great data until they go to a new system. And then they find out how much their data needs to be cleaned up or supplemented or deleted or whatever it is based on the corporate culture. And then finally, they have to be involved in real testing and do testing, testing, and more testing. Real joy sets in, finally, when you are testing and your new system actually provides better answers than your old system. That's what you're looking for. Not that somebody else tested it, but you have to feel the success when you're doing that testing of saying, wow, it's finally working. And that's when you know that they've bought into this and are responsible for the outcome.
Right. I like what you said about not just being an IT or a steering committee project. I agree with you. I mean, that's a good way for these ERP organizational change projects to go sideways pretty quickly. All stakeholders have to be engaged. And really, it starts with what you mentioned previously, Greg, in terms of creating that enthusiasm, getting the commitment, the buy-in, the ownership. You know, all these ideas are a very important part of the process and as a first step in the process. And I think when you do that, and you, as you'd mentioned as well, if you find the right people and you have effective communication, then it's all about creating and being honest about the realities and the expectations of a project across all stakeholder groups. You know, we've seen projects before where there's one particular stakeholder group that hasn't been engaged maybe so much in the whole process. And as it turned out later in the project, that was a big mistake because they created the noise. They weren't prepared. They didn't have the opportunity to be committed or to have that buy-in or to take ownership because they weren't really included in the process. And that's not good. So I absolutely agree that it's so important to get all stakeholders engaged, even if it seems like, you know, initially that they have very little to do, you know, with the implementation itself. The project needs to be completely endorsed and communicated across the organization.
I agree 100%. And that's potentially the biggest failure of a lot of projects is a manager who says they're too busy to be involved. And then the manager at the end is the biggest complainer for not being involved and having their considerations in the system itself. So that's why even if people are a stonewall at the beginning, you still have to overcome that because they become a major problem if that's not overcome when you get to the end of the project.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things too is there's these conceptual ideas, right, that's understood, and especially practitioners who have been in the field and doing this line of work for quite some time, you know, you learn that there's certain things that work. You learn that there's concepts, right, that have to be included into your project plans, but sometimes that's easier said than done. And sometimes turning these conceptual ideas, right, like again, as you had mentioned, creating enthusiasm, getting commitment, buy-in, ownership, they're all very important ideas. But in order to make your project successful, you have to translate those into tactical items within your project plan. You know, you have to turn those into more or less ideas and concepts into actionable steps that you can take. In fact, Greg, you had an article that was titled "The Three-Step Checklist to Ensure Your Business Has the Right Foundations for Success." Can you maybe share with our listeners these three steps? I thought you had some good points there, and we'll be sure to share out this link as well in our show notes.
Certainly. The three steps are being people-centric, adapting to each location, and resilient delivery. So being people-centric means that employees, customers, subcontractors, partners are all the center of the business. You know, even with the pandemic having changed how individuals interact, they need to be efficient digitally, have a good strategy, and work well together. Again, adapting to each location. If you're a larger company and have multiple locations, you have to be recognizing the fact that there's differences in each location and that it may not be 100% uniform as a company. And you have to look at how each location is handled and how you want to handle it in the future. And that the technology and the cybersecurity has to be able to support this new dynamic. And then resilience, over the past year, shown us how volatile businesses are and how much COVID has affected things. And so even when you have a plan, you still have to be able to adapt that plan to the reality of the current situation. And organizations that are prepared to adapt and pivot are the ones that are most likely to succeed. These are not short projects. Over the period of time, even the best plan is going to have some hiccup from the business. In this case, everybody has had a big hiccup due to COVID. Nobody has been able to deny that. Hopefully, it hasn't affected too many businesses negatively, but we have seen where some businesses have been affected by having surges of sales. And that has affected them when they have less employees because the employees have been out sick and they've had to pivot in that case. In all cases, we need management and especially the project management and the executive management here to be very close to the people, be understanding of the different locations and being able to pivot if something happens during the project.
Yeah, great points. And I like the third point there, Greg, about resilience. And I think that's significant. And that plays a huge role in successful ERP organizational change. You know, a lot of times it's just really understanding that there's no perfect implementation, right? There's no such thing. Even for the best of large scale implementations, there's always something. And to have that resilience and that persistence to overcome and to work through various challenges is really a pretty important organizational, I would say, attribute. And one of the things we do is we use heavily a friend and colleague, Dr. Dennison, has the Dennison model, and we'll put a reference to this in the show notes as well. But in order to really understand what that looks like in these different organizational culture attributes, we actually take a survey. And in the Dennison model, it measures, which is what we use, measures for adaptability, mission consistency, and involvement. And we use that as a real tool because then you can take that and it's something that's rather abstract, right? And maybe a bit subjective, and it helps put it to paper, really. And it gives you a place to start when talking about different areas that you can focus on. I really like what you said about resilience and really understanding that. And so the question then would be, it's a very important idea. So what can you do about it? You know, how do you build into your plan these different tactical, I guess, mechanisms to make sure that the organization remains resilient, they're able to adapt and they're flexible throughout the entire process?
To do that, we really have to just say that the project has a baseline and the project has specific KPIs. And when the business changes, for whatever reason, we have, as a management team, have to look at it and be honest with ourselves and clearly communicate those changes to the whole team so that the team is aware that there's a change, so that they aren't looking at us and saying, well, last week you said this, yeah, and now this week you're saying that. No, communication and having the right change management protocols in place help the team to understand why there is a change. You know, and in some cases, if the change is big enough, it affects the timeline of the project, or it affects the scope of the project, yeah, or it affects both. A mature management team is going to say that a major business change will affect the project. And if they don't, they are not looking at the project for success. Now, sometimes you may have some outside mandates that you have and outside constraints, and you may then have to actually change the resourcing of the project to be able to meet those constraints. In some cases, I have seen where projects have gone on to, you know, 16-hour days and paid for hotel rooms for employees because a major storm came up and they wanted to make sure that their employees were safe and able to continue working on the project. And then they hired outside contractors to go and help the employees' families. That was a major, major change, but they needed to do that to keep the project on track because otherwise the employees wouldn't have been able to make it into the office and work on the project, and they would have been concerned with the safety of their families. So this was a major deviation from the plan, that it was handled very, very maturely by the business and was looked at and appreciated by the employees, saying, wow, they care about me.
Wow, that's a good story. So Greg, you'd mentioned earlier the value about defining goals and business objectives. What more can you share about that idea in terms of optimizing goals and business objectives So maybe stated a slightly different way, how would an organization tactically go about this in the context of an ERP organizational change effort? Can you maybe drill a little deeper in that idea of goals, optimizing goals and business objectives, and tactically, what does that look like within your project plan?
Oh, now you're asking me to give away trade secrets.
Yeah, right.
No, seriously. We use a very, very standard approach. I like the SMART system, where SMART, each letter stands for specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound. Mm. So as opposed to having just goals, you want to have a specific goal that should be well-defined and focus on a particular outcome. The goal should be measurable, so it can be quantified and tracked, and we should have a system, a method, and a procedure that can use to measure the progress. The goal should be attainable. We have to consider what the timeline is, what the budget, what the resource availability is, and can the goal be realistically achieved? Is it relevant to the business? For example, a short-term goal should align with the vision of the business. Is it time-bound? You know, it should have a clear start and end date, and it should have a scope that for the resources that are available. So to give a good example of this, we might say that we want to improve sales and cut costs. Those can be goals, but those aren't SMART goals. If we want to make them SMART, we would say that we want to improve component sales by 20% over the year, and we want to cut manufacturing waste by 5% during the same period. So now we've got measurable because we actually said how much. We have attainable ones because they're realistic, they're time-bound, and there's something that the employees and the management of the company can look at and say, yeah, I know what the goal is. Just saying, hey, we want to improve sales, nobody knows if you're going to be successful or not. But when we give it a specific area of sales and a specific amount and a specific time period, now people know what we're looking for. And that's how we optimize the goals.
Well, thanks for giving away your trade secret. So, Greg, what would you say are some of the most common challenges organizations face as they attempt to implement ERP in terms of in a way that maximizes value realization of the ERP? What's your thoughts there? What are some of the most common challenges that prevent organizations from maybe following some of the insight and advice that you've provided so far?
Okay. It starts at the very top. Every CEO knows that they have a good team, and that team leads them to think that since they have a good team, they have a good team for implementing a system. But when was the last time they implemented a system? You know, are they system implementers, or are they employees of the company that have skills for that specific area? That is a downfall for most ERP implementations. Either a department or the whole company thinks that since we're so successful at doing our jobs, how hard can this be? And we have to get them to look realistically at what resources they have and how much experience they have with implementing systems, or else they're starting out at the beginning, you know, and they're going to try to learn all this stuff, and that's really going to be a problem. Another challenge is that everyone underestimates the amount of work it takes to clean up data.
Yeah.
The legacy system had specific requirements, and over time, everybody figured out how to fudge putting in the data so that the system would accept it. And now when you want to convert the data and put it into the new system, all the red lights go on and the bells and whistles start going off and saying, this data just won't fit the new system. So then you have to start putting processes and procedures in to clean up the data. And because this is a long-term effort, you now have to put in processes and procedures to make sure that the data going into your still legacy system stays clean. And there's many times that I've seen people cleaning up the data while the new data is still going in unclean. You know, you get to the point of saying, well, we cleaned up everything. And then you look back and you say, where did all that garbage come from? So, you know, it's a two-pronged effort where not only do you have to clean up the system, but you also have to provide education and training for the people as to how to keep it clean going forward.
Yeah.
And then the last item that I think is a major problem and challenge is that a lot of companies just look to throw the new system in with the existing processes, where you don't want to just computerize your existing processes. Now is the right time to look at whether we should be changing a process, whether there's a way to make it more efficient, whether it's the right way to do it with the new system. So right now, we want to automate the right processes and not just computerize the existing processes.
Great points. I really appreciate that insight. I want to circle back, Greg. There's a bit of a common theme here, I think, in many of your answers today, which I think are really culture-focused, culture-centric. You talked about resilience and creating enthusiasm and getting commitment and buy-in and ownership and finding the right people and communication. And so it seems to me like what you're saying is nurturing culture and promoting and advocating for a healthy culture is a pretty important part of any ERP organizational change project. And number one, I guess, what would you say to that? What role does organizational culture really play in an ERP organizational change effort?
The organizational change is a critical to the success of the ERP effort, but the change is like an iceberg. Most people know it is necessary, but they are only prepared for a small amount that they can see, the tip of the iceberg that's above the water. But most of the change is facilitated by planning and setting up a culture to accept the change before the project starts. If you have a company where the culture is supportive, that when they carry on to the project, you will see people that are willing to support each other. Don't get me wrong, there will still be conflicts, but good project planning and communication will resolve those relatively easily. But if you have a company culture that is cooperative but competitive, then you'll have to work on the change effort to show them how working together obtains the goal. If you have a culture that is a siloed culture, then you have to start at the very beginning and explain why change is good and will help them to keep their jobs. In many cases, companies have built up silos because they think, if nobody else knows what I do, then nobody can fire me. Well, nobody's indispensable, and these people that are siloed normally become the main obstacles to giving up what they do to help the benefit of the company. And so that's the hardest part when you have those, that you have to bring everybody together and show everybody that doing this is the best way to keep their job.
So, Greg, you'd mentioned conflicts there, and we've had other guests on the program, and I've asked them this similar question. So, Greg, what do you think is more likely in your view? Is it the projects that are successful because they properly address conflict? Or are they successful because they are perfect kumbaya projects where there's very little conflict, if any at all? So therefore, they're successful. Based on your experience, which one of those scenarios is more likely?
I have never seen a project without conflict because we're making changes and everybody is concerned about their place in the organization after the change. And the kumbaya is normally people holding it in and are going to explode after we go live and say, no, this doesn't work. I want my old system back. We need to make sure that we get everybody to talk and understand why the new system is better for the company. And that's a key distinguishing point here, is the new system might not be better for everyone, but it's better for the company. If everybody does their part, even if their part is now bigger than it was before and they have to enter 10 pieces of data where they only entered 2 in the past system, that the company will benefit and in turn they will benefit. It may not be direct, it may be indirect, but the company becomes more successful, then they become more successful.
Yeah, and sometimes that takes some, you know, intentional conversation to be able to present and explain and to teach internal stakeholders of that point you make about maybe they are doing a little extra work, but at the end of the day, it's favorable to the organization.
Right. I've only seen systems go in for 2 reasons. One reason is for the benefit of the company to make more money, to have the company expand or make more sales or whatever the actual goal is. And the other reason is to create less work for the CEO.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And sometimes when you create less work for the CEO, it's to make sure that the other people are now doing that work.
Yeah.
You know, so,
right.
You know, it's not that we're going to make it easier for the employees, but we are going to make it so that there's a greater chance that they have their job tomorrow.
Yeah, right. At the end of the day, it's about improving the business and giving the stakeholders the tools to be more productive and efficient and effective and just create a better work environment and a more productive, profitable organization. So, Greg, this has been a fun conversation, and we really appreciate your time. But I would like to conclude our time today with a question that I think we've asked nearly every single guest so far. And again, this is because at the end of the day, it's about collaborative learning and sharing. So I'd like you to, if you would, please, if you were going to give advice to an organization regarding successful ERP implementation as a tool for business continuous improvement and value realization, what would you say? How would you summarize this conversation today for our listeners?
Okay. I think there's several steps that a company should go through for a successful ERP implementation. The first is to carefully evaluate the ERP system that you want to implement and set up realistic goals for the project. And then realistically evaluate the skills and the time available for your staff to participate in the project. With that knowledge, you can then pick the right implementation company to assist you. And they need to be complementary to your staff so that holes that your staff has are filled by the implementation company. In addition to an implementation plan, you want to make sure that you have a well thought out communication and change management plan so that when the changes occur, when the bumps come in the road, you know how to handle them. The next thing is test. Test some more before you go live. I've seen systems that have failed because we've tested 90% and somebody said, that's enough, we can go live, versus that last 10% was where the problem was. Make sure you test 100% before you want to go live. And then never, never go live with a system until it is ready. So if you have to push back, it may take a couple of lumps on pushing back, but it's much more successful to push back and go live when you're ready than to implement it now and forever being in a catch-up mode.
That's good. And I think, Greg, allow me to summarize your advice, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what I heard you say, first of all, I think, you know, we did discuss a pretty wide range of success influences today and from a very high level. And any one of these questions, we could probably easily spend an hour on just drilling into.
Very true.
I think, you know, you said, first and foremost, your advice to our listeners is spend time on partner and system selection. And I couldn't agree more. I think that that's a major, I guess, something that's highly underrated and undervalued for most organizations. So number one, spend time and do your proper due diligence when it comes to system selection and especially partner selection. Number two is just a good tactical project plan. And as you'd mentioned, you highlighted several good points for our listeners today, and especially as it pertains to more organizational culture related items, I would say. But those need to translate from that which is a little more invisible and subjective and hard to see into tactical activities. So number two and number three is absolutely is test. As you'd mentioned throughout our conversation today, there's a lot of changes, both in terms of process and technology and even people. And it really needs to be tested very well and thoroughly. And that needs to be a very important part of any implementation plan as well. You know, so that would include, of course, Greg, I assume you're talking about like integration testing, systems integration testing, user acceptance testing, and of course, CRP, conference room piloting. And every plan needs to really consider that, not cut themselves short when it comes to proper testing. Did I do your summary justice?
Yes, and you're right. We could just talk about testing for an hour.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Greg, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate your dedication to your trade from one practitioner to another. Greg, before we leave, please tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you. And I know that your website is taffet.org, taffet.org, and that'll be in our show notes. But is there another way listeners can get in touch with you, or what's the preferred mechanism to contact Greg?
They can reach me via email at greg@taffet.org, or they can call me directly at 203-536-0988.
Well, great. And we'll put that in the show notes too, Greg, if you don't mind.
Oh, no, please do.
Well, Greg, thank you again. We appreciate it. Thanks for your time today and your insight. And we will talk soon.
I appreciate it. And I look forward to the next time.
You betcha. Thank you so much.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the ERP OCJ podcast. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change successes and challenges. We discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change by drawing on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience. We are incredibly grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us in our podcast as we seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community and contribute to its success by bringing research and practice closer together. We want to make sure this is the most useful and insightful ERP podcast you listen to, and we'd love your help in doing so by leaving us feedback and a review. A great place to do so is at Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Listen in Apple Podcasts link, then click Ratings and Reviews, and let us know your thoughts. You can get more info about the show, including show notes and episode highlights for this and all of our episodes, by visiting nesselandassociates.com and clicking the podcast option. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media, hashtag the ERP OCJ. Thanks again for listening. Have a fantastic week.